Yeah, Edo Liberty's going to talk on some extensions on Monday afternoon on related results to that, what I call subspace Johnson-Lennon stress. So he's going to show something that was actually closely related to the original Johnson-Lennon stress. Subspace Johnson-Lennon stress meant that you would preserve sort of inner products of all vectors in a subspace by applying a random matrix to that. The original Johnson-Lennon stress says you preserve the norms or inner products between an arbitrary collection of vectors. Clearly, you can get to subspace Johnson-Lennon stress by proving bound in the classical Johnson-Lennon stress. So apologies again for the delay. So the last talk was discussing mainly work by others that I was not associated with. This will be not quite as a technical of a talk, a little more of an advertisement. It's work on this is a randomized algorithm for approximating the SPD of a matrix or for low rank matrix approximation. This is the third point that I promised we'd discuss, and is partly. And this is joint work with Pergardner Mertensen, who's here, and Vladimir Rothman. And we'll see that this is also related to work by many others, including Petro Strunats, who's here. So this talk will be a little more standard than the previous. We'll first see some related work. Work related to the subject of this talk, and discuss some theoretical properties of a randomized algorithm for solving the low-rank matrix approximation problem. Then we'll see exactly what the steps in the algorithm are, see some empirical results of this algorithm, how it runs on a computer, and then prove some accuracy bounds, or at least sketch the proof of accuracy bounds for this algorithm, and see some, very briefly, applications, generalizations, and draw some conclusions about the algorithm. So there's been a bunch of deterministic algorithms that are related to these things. I'll just sort of draw from these as we go along, perhaps more relevant for the current randomized algorithms are these. I should mention that this first article here, Papadimitriou, Rakhavan, Tamaki, and Vimpela, introduced this algorithm, gave a different analysis, one that others have since sharpened a bit, including Sarlos at the bottom there. And some others have been looking at similar algorithms, such as Petro Strunats, and Ravi Khanna, Michael Mahoney, and their collaborators. Okay, so let me set what I mean by an SPD of a matrix here, because it's maybe slightly non-standard. And that's given an M by N matrix A, you get M by 1 vectors called left singular vectors, U1 through UK, and orthonormal N by 1 vectors, right singular vectors, V1 through VK, non-negative numbers called singular values, sigma 1 in greater than or equal to sigma 2, all in non-increasing order. Such that the matrix is just that linear combination there in equation 1. This differs from the normal definition of SPD in that we're not taking a full basis of orthonormal vectors, just taking a few k of them. So some people call this economy-sized SPD or birthday and SVD or things like that. Okay. And here, that looks a little more familiar. Here, the U and the V are not unitary matrices like they usually are with the SVD, but they're just parts of unitary matrices. Okay. So don't let me confuse you on this. This is low rank approximation. U and V are tall and skinny. Okay, so what is low rank matrix approximation? I keep mentioning it, should define what it is. So if you pick a positive integer k less than the rank of A, then you can consider the following minimization problem. Minimize a spectral norm, that's what that, all norms here will be spectral norms, of A minus B, where the rank of B is equal to k. So again, k is less than the rank of A. And that objective function there attains the minimum being sigma k plus 1, the first omitted sigma divide. So this should look familiar to many people from numerical analysis. And the minimum is attained by simply taking and throwing away the singular vectors and values that are k plus 1 and greater. So you just retain the first k to get that b. So why would you be interested in low rank approximation? Well, there's a number of reasons. First and foremost is the compression of subblocks of matrices, maybe arising from discretization of smoothing integral operators and inverses. So for instance, you might be trying to solve the Laplace equation, probably the most common equation in physics. Then if you write down an integral equation for solving that thing, then its integral kernel will have off-diagonal blocks that are low rank. And you can speed up the computation of, in, say, solving PDEs by compressing those operators. So that's one use of these things. Another one, which is sort of more related to the search engines, is that low-rank approximations are classical. Hotelling introduced them into statistics. In the principal component analysis. Okay, and this can be used for, say, noise removal. Here you'll be thinking of in low rank matrix approximation, you're going to get a good approximation if the singular values become small after some point. Okay, often, singular values that are small will correspond to noise. And so you can get rid of noise by throwing away the small singular values. That's what we do in low rank approximation. And the thing that is most relevant to this conference here, the semester program, is that low-rank approximations can provide sort of tractable, easily understandable representations of, say, term document matrices in latent semantic indexing, as you would get, say, in the early search engines sort of ran this way. Modern search engines, I guess, use more link structure, but this may be very relevant for future search engines. It may be relevant now, too. I'm not sure exactly what Google's doing. And when you ask, they don't tell you. Let's see. So let me just state what this randomized algorithm will do. This is the accuracy that it attains. This is going to be a randomized algorithm for low-rank matrix approximation. So suppose that A is an M by N matrix. Then the algorithm here that we'll be discussing computes a rank K matrix B such that the spectral norm of A minus B is less than or equal to 10 root K plus 20N times the K plus first singular value of A. And this is with probability at least 1 minus 10 is minus 17. Okay, so this is a very high probability. It's unlikely to fail. Now observe here that if I omitted this factor, then the rank K matrix B would be the best possible. So without this factor here, if B attained that without this estimate here, without this factor here, it would be the best possible. Okay, so in fact, this algorithm does not get the best possible accuracy, but it gets within this factor of the best possible. Okay, in standard applications of this thing, you're taking sigma k plus 1 to be very small. So if you're doing things numerically, you often ask for your matrix approximation to be accurate to the numerical precision, the machine precision of the calculations that you're working in. So in many cases, sigma k plus 1 will be, say, 16 digits if you're working in double precision, 8 digits if you're working in single. And then this factor here will be, well, and in any application that we can currently handle, is never more than several digits, and root n is not so big. So this is sort of close, at least within several digits of sigma k plus 1. And often sigma k plus 1 of A will be very small.
So just to understand, what's the order of m and n you're talking about in this?
Yeah, so the things that we can currently handle on, say, a desktop computer will be, let's say you have a sparse matrix as sparse as a Laplacian. And we can go up to about 10 million, 100 million by 100 million. Okay. Hey, you're going to wait a few seconds for that to happen, but to use the algorithm. Yeah.
Can I ask you a meta question? When you come up with this number, like probably 10 to minus 17, that supposes that I can randomly sample numbers on my computer, which I
can. Yes.
So
that is very true.
In some applications, I don't actually care, but in numerical analysis, when you say, but because nobody knows how to draw a random Gaussian number. Right?
Yeah. So one very important point of this is if you use pseudorandom numbers for this. It's very forgiving in terms of how random they actually seem to be. Okay. Now this is an empirical, obviously,
sure.
observation, but it works extremely well even if you have numbers that are even visually not random. Okay. So I'll say I must have gotten suggestions from probably 5 different people. Say, can't you de-randomize this? Instead of using your random vectors, can't you plug in the noislets of Coiffman and Mayer? Well, there exists a matrix for which it won't work, but of course, if you did actually use noislets, it'll work for every practical matrix that you encounter. So so the answer here is that pseudorandom numbers seem to be perfectly fine for this. And it'll become apparent why. We're using them for a very coarse part of the algorithm. Okay. It's not like Monte Carlo where... That's an excellent point. Yeah.
I work in similar areas and also make statements
sure.
with probability, but, you know,
yeah.
I don't claim that I can get the 18 digits one out of 10 billion of the time, so...
Oh, no, here you do. If you sample
the random. If you try to make this a mathematical statement with a pseudo-random generator that I can get this, then that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be good, too. Yeah, that is true. I also want to mention, someone already was concerned. Here's N sitting here, and the problem size might get sort of big. So root N might get, well, it's not really that big, but it could get a little bit bigger than you'd like. In some circumstances, you can get rid of that. And that's, say, suppose your singular values are decaying such that the singular value becomes smaller than sigma k plus 1 over root n at some point. Okay, so they're going down fast enough that this happens. Then you can replace that n with j, okay, the point at which this happens. So if you're concerned with that n, you actually won't see it if this comes up. And it's just the same state with that same probability of failure. So the algorithm has an accuracy, it also has a cost, and the cost of it is you apply your matrix that you're trying to approximate to k plus 20 vectors. Okay, this 20 here I just picked so I would get probability 10 to minus 17 of failure. Okay, if you pick another number, say 8, then you'll get probability 10 to minus 5 of failure. Okay. And obviously, you can vary all this. But for the sake of being concrete, let's just consider 20. So you have to apply your matrix A to k plus 20 vectors, and you have to apply the adjoint of your matrix to k vectors. And there's also an order k squared times m plus n flux that you need in addition. I should mention that this order here, that big O, might make you concerned. In some sense, it is somewhat of a concern, but it's not that big in the sense that it's just the cost of computing a few SVDs using standard algorithms on an by k plus 20 matrix here, think of k plus 20 as small compared to m. And a k by n matrix here, think of k as small by compared to n. And also for multiplying m by k matrix and a k by k matrix. Okay. So the constant hidden by that big O is not that big. It's tolerable in most many circumstances. Now to give some examples of matrices, if you're not familiar with, say, Lanczos, then here's some matrices which you can apply fast. So the obvious one is a sparse matrix. You can also apply a discrete Fourier transform fast. You wouldn't want to use the algorithm on it, but you might want to use a composition of a sparse matrix and a discrete Fourier transform or something like that. The tuplets matrix, same thing. Fast multipole method. Of course, any blockwise combination or composition of, say, subblocks of the above, you can also apply fast. So those are some examples that do come up in applications, at least in, say, PDEs. So what is the algorithm? Well, here's step one. So the first step, and here's the key step. We test A on k plus 20 vectors whose entries are, ideally, IID, normal 0, 1 random variables in order to identify the range of A. So we're just testing our matrix on a few vectors to try to see what the range is, see what the image of that matrix is. Just to formalize that, that's multiplying the m by n matrix A and an n by k plus 20 matrix R, whose entries are IID, normal 0, 1 variables, to get our matrix P down here. Okay. So observe that P is m by k plus 20, whereas A was m by n, and we're thinking of k plus 20 as much smaller than n. Okay. Just to connect that to your question here, you can see why how random the variables are doesn't really matter that much. You're just trying to pick out the.
Well, you don't want to be in the null space of A, definitely.
Exactly. Right. That's the only point.
That's the only point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So step two, now using an SVD, that's not the only way. You can also use QR. We find the left singular vectors corresponding in the k greatest singular values of the m by k plus 20 matrix P and form an m by k matrix Q with the left singular vectors of P as its columns. Okay, and what we're going to do is show that the set of columns of Q is close to an orthonormal basis for the range of A. So we tried to identify the range of A by applying A to several random vectors, and then we just took those random vectors that, or the result of that and orthogonalized them to get Q. Okay, so we're hoping Q is going to be, the columns of Q are going to be a good orthonormal basis for the range of A. In fact, we'll prove that. Sketchily prove that is. And of course, how close they are to an orthonormal basis for the range of A is determined both by the best possible rank K approximation, sigma K plus 1 of A, and by the condition number of the random matrix R with which we multiply A. Which is exactly what you said. You don't want to be in the null space. Yep. So step three of the algorithm. Now, basically everything's pretty straightforward now. So we've got an orthonormal basis for the range of A, and the rest is fairly straightforward. If we now apply A adjoint to the vectors, which of course constitute the orthonormal basis, we multiply the n by m matrix A transpose and the n by k matrix Q, just getting this matrix S. And then you take your matrix S and compute the SVD of it. The SVD of S transpose is written here in equation 12. So T is a unitary matrix, and V has orthonormal columns, and sigma is just what we're going to use as our singular values, our matrix of singular values. Okay, and the last step of the algorithm is you multiply the m by k matrix Q and the k by k matrix T to get your left singular vectors U. So U is just Q times T. And then, well, on the previous slide we had our sigma and our V, so we already got those, and now we have U. And U, sigma V, transpose is our desired approximation to A. We're going to show that it's a good approximation shortly. So that's So that's a bunch of steps. Let me recap what they are. So the first step, again, is you take and test your matrix A on several random vectors. So you form P equals A times R. And again, R is random, or as random as you can get. In step two, you form Q M by K, and that's just the matrix whose columns consist of the left singular vectors corresponding to the K greatest singular values of P. So in some sense, you're doing a rank K approximation in step two. In step three, you now use the adjoint of your matrix and form S equals adjoint A adjoint times Q. And step four, you compute the SVD of S transpose, get that. And step five, you just multiply Q by T. Okay. And again, the U sigma V transpose coming out of this algorithm is supposed to be a good approximation to the matrix. Why is it supposed to be a good approximation? Well, this is sort of why. If you put together the equations on the previous transparency, then you get this equality here. So just, I'm not going to do it, but put together all these steps 1 through 5, the equations there, and you'll eat. Oh, no. Oh, jeez.
Is
it the projector? Is it the machine?
The fan is not the projector.
Oh,
no.
I don't believe this is.
I don't
believe it. Okay.
So it was unplugged. All right. That's the easiest. Any questions in the meantime? Or what's up? Still developing, so it should come up pretty soon. I can send you Fortran code for that if that's what you need. So we were at this slide, right? And just putting together all the steps of the algorithm, so putting together all those equations, you would get this equality here. That's just an identity, triviality. Now, in equation 14, we're hoping that here this QQ transpose times A is going to be approximately equal to our matrix A. And By the end of the talk, we'll actually show that that's true. Okay. So given that, you'll, well, obviously equation 14 says A is approximately equal to the singlet by decomposition. Now before we go and show the theoretical results, let's, yeah, apparently it was unplugged.
Oh, that sounds pretty small.
Before we see the theoretical results, before we prove the theoretical results on this algorithm, I'd like to discuss what it does empirically. And as you take n, the size of the matrix, so an n by n matrix A, as you take n from about 100 to a million, with rank k equals 10, the rank k approximation B to that n by n matrix A is such that the special norm of the difference, A minus B, ranges from 10 to the minus 7 to 2 times 10 to the minus 7. And here, the best possible is going to be 10 to the minus 8. So these should look kind of familiar. They're sort of similar to the accuracy we saw on the regression. Okay. Also, I just wanted to mention that the matrix here was normalized. So it's a sensible thing to get it to 8 digits. Also, I wanted to mention that the number of random vectors that you need here is really, well, somewhat surprising to at least to me. These tests that I ran that you lost a digit, or two times a digit, I ran that with L equals K. So L equals K plus zero. No extra random variables. We have estimates that actually shows that it works in that case, too. But this is with the Gaussian IID random variables. Okay, so you do not get your problem probabilities of 10 to the minus 17, at least theoretically, when you don't have several extra vectors. But it still works. Just to tell you what the matrix was, I used, again, the left and right singular vectors are just randomly taken from the orthogonal group. The singular values were just exponentially decaying. And there were several down at 10 to the minus 8. So we did a rank k approximation. So we're expecting that the accuracy we can get is given by the k plus per, or the 11th singular value there. Now, because the n by n matrix was rank 20, the costs of this algorithm were all, well, it's dominated by applying your matrix to a vector. And you can do that in time proportional to n. So this should be no great shakes. It should not surprise you at all. It's just linear within for these matrices. Okay. Obviously, this cost varies very much depending on what kind of matrix you select to apply. Okay. Yeah, I should mention that this is a concocted example for showing that the algorithm works. This is not a kind of matrix you would want to use it in practice on. This is just to show that the bounds are correct. I needed to pick a matrix here for which we knew the singular values and singular vectors. The easiest way to do that is specify them. Okay. Now going back to the theory, here's a stratagem for the proof of the accuracy bounds. I'll review this after we do them. So first step is you apply the triangle inequality multiple times. This breaks the estimate into two contributions. So one's going to be an optimization over space of dimension k. That's a low-dimensional space. And the other one's going to require the existence of a good bound in a high-dimensional space. But that existence will not require you to compute something. It's just a theoretical existence. Step two, we're going to optimize over that space of dimension k, that low-dimensional space, directly by a brute force computation as a step in the algorithm. Actually, we already saw that. You compute an SVD in one of those steps. And the third step is that to prove that existence of a bound in the high-dimensional space, you can work all estimates on paper within the basis of the right singular vectors of the matrix A to be recovered. Okay? Why is this okay? I thought we were trying to compute the right singular vectors of A. Well, we only need to see the existence of the bound, so we can use them to show that the bound exists, even though we cannot compute them without running the algorithm first. And then we may observe that the key thing to recovering this matrix is that the condition number of the matrix R whose entries are IID normal 01 is not too large of high probability. And I'll mention those refined estimates on that matrix R. Okay, so proof of the accuracy bounds. The first step is this. You take your M by N matrix A and consider a whole bunch of other matrices. So Q is going to be M by K. R is N by K plus 20. W is K plus 20 by N. And Z is K by K plus 20. The main point here is to see that Q, R, W, and Z are all kind of small matrices, whereas A is big. Okay. Then just a trivial application of the triangle inequality a few times will get you equation 15. This is just, well, you also use the fact that the columns of Q are orthonormal, but this comes up pretty easily. And what we'd like to do is by choosing W and Z, we'd like to show that A minus Q transpose A is comparable to sort of the best possible rank K approximation. Why do we want that? Well, we used it somewhere already, right here. And I didn't justify it, okay? So we're going back to justifying that equality. And we like to do that by choosing W and Z. Okay, well, the algorithm chooses the columns of Q to consist of the left singular vectors of A times our random matrix R, which correspond to the K greatest singular values of A times R. Okay. So, with an appropriate choice for Z, you see that the spectral norm of AR minus Q times Z is going to be comparable to the accuracy, or no, less than or equal to the accuracy of the best possible rank K approximation of AR. Okay, so this is the best possible accuracy of rank K approximation to AR. Right? And we choose Q as the left singular vectors of AR. So by choosing Z to be, well, the appropriate singular values times the right singular vectors, then you get this first inequality there. And the second inequality is just trivial. That's a standard bound. Now, if you put together the formula on the previous page and equation 17, so equation 15 is there, stick in this bound here, equation 17, then you get equation 18. So we've simplified the second term here. So I just duplicated equation 18 there and equation 19. And now we observe that, I have to quote some bounds. Since the norm, spectral norm of R of that random matrix is not too large with very high probability, so this is not too large, then all we have to do is show that in principle there exists a K plus 20 by N matrix W such that this term here, the first term there, is of the order of sigma K plus 1, and W is not too large. Okay. Then we'll get the whole right-hand side sort of comparable to sigma K plus 1 of A. Okay. Now, most importantly, we don't have to be able to compute this matrix W, we just have to know that it exists in order to get our bound. Now, the key idea that goes into generating this matrix W is that, well, the entries have the same joint probability distribution with respect to any orthonormal basis for a vector whose entries in one orthonormal basis are IID normal 0, 1 random variables. Okay, so this is important, so I better say it again. So you take a vector whose entries are IID normal 0, 1 random variables, and you look at them in any basis that you want, they'll also be or IID normal 0, 1 random variables in that basis. Okay? A vector with that distribution is invariant under orthogonal transformations. Okay? And so that's a well-known fact. So within the proof that there exists a linear operator which recovers our specified matrix A from the vectors resulting from applying A to K plus 20 such random vectors, you know, these random vectors, we can conduct all calculations in the basis of the right singular vectors of A, okay? Because the random vectors that we're testing against are orthogonally invariant, we get to choose whatever basis we want to work in, and they'll still be the same kind of vectors that they started out. So why not choose the right singular vectors of A? If you do that, I'm going to sort of skip over the detailed calculations, but you might see that, if you view it from the in the basis of its right singular vectors, looks diagonal from a certain direction. Okay.
So, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I actually didn't know about this paper von Neumann. Why was he concerned?
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So this all becomes trivial. So you need some estimates on the condition number of a matrix. Okay. This paper is not really about estimating the condition number of this matrix. Okay. These papers by Goldstein and von Neumann are very famous papers that set up numerical analysis, basically, in the early 50s. They were analyzing what does... They were the first papers that defined condition number, in fact.
Oh, I see.
So they were analyzing what kind of accuracy can you achieve in a computation under floating point arithmetic. Okay. And one thing that they did a randomized analysis of this thing. Okay. And one thing that they needed to do their randomized analysis was a good sharp bound on the spectral norm of the random matrix filled with IID Gaussians. And they gave a very good one. Yeah, and Goldstein was no slouch either. So, more recently, Chen and Nongera gave very simple, useful bounds on the condition number of such matrices. If you're interested in how these come about, it's a lot of group theory, representation theory. You can actually just write down what the condition or what the characteristic polynomial of a matrix of IID Gaussians is, and then given the characteristic polynomial, you know something about its roots are the singular values, so you can say something about it. So I just wanted to mention that their bounds are really simple and they're quite tight. They're within a factor about within a universal constant about. Now I want to mention one peculiarity of this analysis. So we had to try to reconstruct a matrix from knowing what it was multiplied by a random matrix. Okay, when you do this, the first thought that will come to your mind is, well, how do you reconstruct a matrix? You apply some kind of pseudo-inverse of the procedure that you looked at. Okay, that actually leads to problems in this case. At least I haven't been able to push it through. But you can do something in place of that. So, as the condition number of R is not too large with high probability, we can recover A from AR to within about the best possible rank K approximation by multiplying AR from the right by a matrix, which we call W, which does depend on R, but is independent of the singular value distribution of A. Okay? So, of course, in principle, you might be able to recover A better by taking into account the singular value decomposition, or the singular values, and other information about A. But in fact, and it should seem sort of intuitively clear to you, it seems to be sufficient. Well, it is, it seems to be. I mean, you can show that it's sufficient to recover A solely by knowing which subspace constitutes A's range without knowing the structure of A in that subspace. So the whole key to our algorithm is simply you take your matrix A, apply it to a random matrix, and identify the range, just whatever subspace constitutes the range. And that's all you need to know. You don't care about what A looks like in that subspace. And again, that's another reason that the actual random variables which you use are sort of not so important to the functioning of this algorithm. And in fact, in a month from now, we'll replace those random variables. In a talk from a month ago, in a month from now, I'll mention replacing these random variables here that were Gaussian IIDs with the fast matrix that we saw the other day. I should have mentioned that this fast matrix was in many ways sort of introduced by Alon and Chazelle. I didn't credit them properly. So just doing the recap there, that was quite a bit to munch on. So what did we do? We applied the triangle inequality multiple times, and that broke the estimate into the sum of two contributions. One which was involved optimization over a small dimensional space based at dimension k, and the other one required the existence of a good bound in the high dimensional space. Then, to handle that low dimensional space, we just handled it by a brute force. We did whatever we needed to. It's just low dimensional space, we can do that efficiently. Actually computationally handling that. And step three, we just proved the existence of a bound in the high dimensional space, existence only. We weren't able to compute the matrices which we showed exist. And we did that working all estimates on paper within the basis of the right singular vectors in the matrix A to be recovered. Okay. And then we observed that the condition number of the matrix R is not too big. So let me sort of finish up here. So some of the applications, I think we mentioned them before. So you have noise removal and search engines, latent semantic indexing. Also, I wanted to mention sort of maybe one of the main purposes of this algorithm is to optimally compress into standard forms SVDs, suboptimally compressed matrices. So if you have a matrix which you can apply sort of fast, but you actually know it is low rank, you don't know what that low rank thing is, you have it represented as a product of several other matrices, then you can use this algorithm to get that low rank matrix, that low rank, the optimal low rank approximation. And let's see, I should probably mention Lanczos, as this is the standard way for handling matrices which you can apply fast to random vectors and compare it. Lanczos method for low rank matrix approximation. Lanczos has other uses, and the randomized algorithm is not for those uses. But for low rank matrix approximation, we'll look at the Lanczos method at the best possible performance with respect to round off by using complete reorthogonalization, and look at that. While the costs of Lanczos are similar to the randomized algorithm's costs, however, observe that the Lanczos method is iterative, whereas the direct algorithm is just one shot. Okay, you just run it once, and it gives the guaranteed accuracy bounds. Lanczos, you have to run iteratively. That's also important for parallelization. Iterative algorithms have trouble parallelizing, whereas this randomized algorithm parallelizes quite naturally. Also, I should mention that, again, analogous to what we saw in the previous talk, Lanczos has trouble when the singular values are degenerate. So Lanczos depends on the gaps in the singular values, on the it depends on the spectrum of your matrix, whereas the randomized algorithm works sort of independently of the spectrum. Doesn't depend on the gaps in the singular values. And that's important, of course, because in engineering you often have symmetries, and that often gives you degenerate singular values. Often very highly degenerate singular values. Okay, so I'll skip that. Let's go to the conclusion. So, what did we see? What should you remember? Well, there's a robust, efficient randomized algorithm for computing a lower rank approximation. An approximation to an SVD of a matrix A for which A and A transpose can be applied rapidly to arbitrary vectors. And given any positive integer K, the algorithm constructs a rank K approximation whose accuracy is of the same order as the accuracy of the best possible rank K approximation. Same order, I mean, there could be a root of the matrix size in there. The algorithm does have a negligible probability of failure. 10 to the minus 17 is sort of typical. If you take 20 extra vectors, that's what you get. And it operates reliably independently of the structure of the matrix A. So it doesn't depend on the gaps in the singular values. I want to mention one more thing. So here we looked at an algorithm for computing an approximation to an SVD of a matrix A for which A and A transpose can be applied rapidly to vectors. But suppose you're only given the entries of a matrix A. You're not given an algorithm for computing, for applying them to arbitrary vectors fast. Well, then there's something else that you can do, and that'll be the talk from a month from now in workshop 2.